everyone. Welcome back to today's episode. Have you ever suffered a loss in your life, whether it be a loss of a job, a loss of a loved one, a loss of a dream even, and found yourself in a place where maybe you just didn't know what to do next? Maybe you were struggling to navigate through without that person, that job, whatever it is. Well, today's guest is going to share with you some of the strategies that she developed, or a strategic approach that she developed, to help navigate life's transitions. And this all came from her effort to heal from loss upon loss. So I want to welcome my guest today, Becky Burrows. Hello, Becky.
Hi, Lisa. It's good to be with you.
So glad to have you. Well, let me introduce you formally to our listening audience today, and then we'd love to get into a conversation about this topic of loss and healing. So Becky Burrows has served in a variety of leadership positions for over 50 years as a small business owner, a high school principal at Dallas Christian School, and for the past 18 years, a minister at Highland Oaks Church of Christ in Dallas, where she has held a variety of positions, administration, children's minister, executive minister, and now outreach minister. She's also a life and leadership coach for women, coaching them to be effective leaders. Her approach centers on the idea that if you want to be a boss of someone, you must first learn how to be the boss of yourself. So true. And Becky is also a speaker and an author. Her book, Come Back to You, instantly became an Amazon bestseller, as did her collaborative book, Elevate Your Voice. And as I mentioned, in an effort to heal from loss upon loss, she developed this strategic approach to navigating life's transitions and embracing the next chapter, which is the foundation of her book. Well, it sounds like you and I have had similar backgrounds in terms of different roles in ministry. Multi-talented in that way, but such a rich learning experience, I'm sure.
It really has been. I've often said I'm the church utility player. Very often in churches, when someone leaves, you know, behind closed doors, you say, is there any way we can cover this job without hiring somebody? Because churches are always looking at budgets. And so I've stepped up, said, I can do that. And it led to a variety of roles, each of which has taught me so much about the different aspects of ministry in particular, but certainly about leadership.
Yes, that is such a valuable asset for sure. Well, I'd love to know a little bit more about how you came to create these strategic approaches, if you want to share part of that story in terms of your own healing journey and the loss that you suffered in life.
I'd be glad to, because it really was pivotal. And to me, not only writing about it and developing a strategic approach to it, but coaching other women. So, you know, I've had a great life, and I have rocked along for many, many years, happily living my life. I was married. I had four children. I now, in 2 weeks, will have grandchildren number 19. So I've had a very rich, full life. But about 8 years ago, I found myself divorced after 41 years of marriage. And in a very short span of time, my dad died suddenly. My husband of 41 years walked out the door, ending our marriage. My mother died very slowly. My job changed, and we went through a worldwide pandemic. And I found myself going through just a full-blown, what I call a full-blown identity crisis. I realized I had placed my entire identity in the titles I wore, the roles I filled, and the responsibilities I had. Mm. And all of those, one by one, were stripped away in a short period of time. And I didn't know who I was anymore or what my purpose was. And so I began this quest for healing. I wanted to heal. I don't want to be anybody's victim. I wanted to take charge of my life. And having married very young, at the age of 19, I had never lived on my own. So I was alone for the very first time at the age of 60. And so I began deep dives into scripture. I began reading about grieving, and I realized that my whole life, for some strange reason, I had reserved grieving for death. If someone died, I knew I was supposed to grieve. Anything less than death, I thought I was just supposed to suck it up and deal with it. And you get hit with so many things at once that need to be grieved, each one in its own way. And then all at once, I had no choice but to learn how to grieve. So I began reading a lot of books about grieving, which made me realize I want to grieve in a resilient way. I don't want to settle for half a life. I had known too many women who stopped living the day their husbands walked out the door or died. And they just, you know, wanted to kind of hold on to everything, their life as it once was. And I realized I didn't want that to be me. So I just developed this process, and people in my world kept going, how are you doing this? How are you so resiliently? How are you embracing life like this? What did you do? And I realized I may be onto something here. So I decided to put it in a book form. And because I am a life and leadership coach, the book is a kind of a combination of my story with coaching principles. In the last chapter, which is my favorite chapter, I interview other women, women who have been through a variety of major life transitions, to find out what they did to heal, how what they learned, how they grew. That's the thrust of the book, is not just, you know, going through awful things, but what did you learn? How did you grow? What would you do differently now as a result of what you've been through? And I define a major life transition as when you go through something that for you is so significant, you're not the same anymore for having gone through that. You're different in some way. Now, how you change is up to you. Do you become bitter? Do you become sad for the rest of your life? Or do you turn this thing into something that works for you? And so the book is called Come Back Home to You, Navigate Life's Transitions and Embrace Next Chapter Living. So the idea is we go through.
Can I just interrupt 1 second there? I love this conversation because I love what you said there about how we often first think about loss as death. I personally have experienced the death of a spouse, and but also a lot of other losses that are secondary to that. So even when there's a divorce, for example, and you probably can speak to this as well, but some of the secondary losses that happen as a result of that change in relationship.
Not only the loss of the spouse, the companion, the loss of you're no longer married, so that's a title that you don't get to wear, the loss of the dream. Everyone gets with an idea of what's going to happen. You know, either I'm going to die first, he's going to die first, or it, like in The Notebook, we're going to die at the same time holding hands.
Right.
And so we have whatever that dream is, or that dream of what we're going to do once we retire. And you have to grieve each one of those things, the loss of the spouse, the loss of the marriage, the loss of the dream. And I always, because I was married for so long, I always say, lost my husband and it ended my marriage, because that marriage becomes your identity and you don't realize it until it's stripped away. And now you have to say, I'm single or I'm divorced. And people are treated differently. Women are treated differently, divorced women, than widows. At my church, it's very common for someone to continue to talk to the widow about her sweet husband and all the wonderful memories. They'll even get up from the pulpit and say, you know, this would have been George's, you know, so-and-so birthday, or he and Sally Mae would have had this anniversary. When you're divorced, it's like you were never married. No one ever mentions it. One time I was in a small group at our church, you know, we divide into small groups, and these were all friends of mine. And we were sitting around a table eating, and one of them told a funny story about their first date, which led to the couple. I was, of course, the only single there of all these couples. It led them to go around the room, each telling their story of their first date. When it got to the person on my left, and I was getting ready to tell my funny story, they skipped over me and went to the person on my right. And I was so shocked, and it was still so new. And I think they thought they were doing me a favor, you know, because I hadn't been divorced that long. I would have probably gotten emotional. They probably thought they were doing me a favor, but I felt invisible.
Right.
Like my story didn't matter. One time we had a woman whose husband had died, and she came to church for the first time. And I walked up to her, and I'm trying to say healing words and listening to her. And as I'm listening to her talk about how she was doing, she glanced over and she saw another woman approaching us who was also a widow. And she goes, she gets it. And I thought, I get loss. I get pain. I get grief. But it's just, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot to lose. Whether you lose a spouse to death or divorce, it is a huge loss. And as you said, you're losing more than one thing.
Yeah. And even relationships, like you talked about the other things, the titles and things, but even, for example, relationships that you had as a couple, now those relationships change for various reasons. So there's those kinds of losses. But I'm also thinking about something you just said there. Sometimes you feel disqualified now. Disqualified. Yeah. In some circles, it sounds like in the context of the church that you're in, that didn't disqualify you from ministry. But in some situations, it disqualifies people from ministry. It disqualifies people from holding positions.
Yes. I was very fortunate in that my husband took full responsibility for what he did, the choice he made in life. And he wrote a letter to the elders of our church accepting full responsibility. And that ended, I didn't lose my job. But more often than not, in the church world, you know, it does necessarily often mean that someone's going to have to step down from their role, which then becomes yet another loss.
Another loss. Yeah. All right. Well, this is good. Let's get into a little bit of the process that you developed along the way to not only help you, but discovered that it would also help others.
Yeah. The first thing that I listed, and I probably won't list these in order because I don't have the book in front of me, is to practice personal reflection. I think it is so important. This is something I do at the end of every day. I do it at the end of an event that I've planned or a trip I've taken, is to reflect back on it and say, okay, what worked about that? What was really good about what's good? I'll take today. What really worked about today? What did I do well? And nothing, I tell myself, nothing is too small to mention. And that is to create that attitude of celebration. We're so good at beating ourselves up when things go wrong, but let's take some time to celebrate what went well. So I get to work on time and I didn't get a ticket because I didn't speed and I remembered to bring my lunch and, you know, whatever I can say that makes me feel good about myself. And then when I've exhausted all of those, I'll say, well, what didn't work today or didn't work as well as I thought it would? And then again, nothing's too small to mention. I go through that. And what might I do differently next time so that I can get in learning mode? Because I think that mistakes are only mistakes if you didn't learn anything. Mm-hmm. And then the last question is, what if? That invitation for me to think outside the box. And I think that's just a good daily practice because we do just naturally ruminate and beat ourselves up over the day, but to get into a practice of celebrating. I also think it's important to identify your values. As you are experiencing a loss, whether it is a planned loss, such as empty nest, or it is an unexpected loss, such as death or divorce of a spouse, to figure out who I am after this loss, you first have to identify what matters to me. And for the believer, of course, we're going to list all things related to God at the top. And so I'm really going deeper than that. I'm assuming that, right? I'm assuming that as Christians, you know, we place our spiritual lives, God and Jesus, the Holy Spirit at the top of it. But me personally, what is something that Becky really values? So for example, the person who values honesty is always going to be honest, but they're always going to be able to tell when someone's not being honest because that's something they really value. For the person who values hard work, that's going to determine this and that. For the person who values self-care. So identifying what really matters to me. What do I talk about a lot? What do I spend time on? What am I bothered when I don't do it? And identifying those top few values gives me a framework to work on. Okay, so since I value, for example, I value learning. I have an insatiable, I mean, it's a sickness. I have an insatiable desire for knowledge. I'll be that 95-year-old woman taking 10 classes because I'm always wanting to learn the next thing. Since I know that about myself, I have to make sure that for me to have life satisfaction, I need to always be learning something because I value it so highly. And everybody has things like that that they really value. I do a lot of mindset work in my coaching. I think that, you know, you can't always control what happens to you, but you should be in complete control of how you respond to it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is how you choose to think. And that's in the introduction you mentioned, you know, if you're going to, before you can be the boss of someone else, you've got to be the boss of yourself. That's mindset. Mm-hmm. That is, you know, quieting that inner critic or not making assumptions when you lack complete information or how to resist those limiting beliefs that hold you back and keep you stuck, things like that. And so I just take people through who read the book through just some practices that it's not a one and done. It's really a daily practice of deciding, you know, God created me to be unique. It is my job to fully live into who he has called me to be. And it's my lifelong quest to figure out who she is and how God wants to use me. For some reason, he thought the world needed Becky Burrows in the 21st century. What am I supposed to do with that? What, mm-hmm. How has he uniquely gifted me to live into what it is he's calling me to do? And I think that's a lifelong quest. And so I think these things that I've discovered that really help navigating major life transitions would just become healthy practices.
It's so good. I love that. I love the part about the values as well, because it really helps you to get in touch with what are those non-negotiables in your life.
Exactly.
In, you know, in terms of decision making, and because I think a lot of times if we don't identify that, that's where we get ourselves into trouble. It's like, oh no, I should never have committed to that, or I should never have whatever it is, because we are operating out of a different place. And so I love that's one of the core steps, or one of the core keys that you list there. So what are some of the mistakes that, when I say mistakes, what are some of the pitfalls that women fall into in transitions in their life?
Well, you take any transition. Again, there are planned transitions that we know are going to happen. We expect them. But I think one of the first pitfalls is not realizing that even with a planned transition, even with one you're looking for, with change comes loss, and with loss comes grief. And, you know, I think there's different levels of grieving. Like, we would all consider being widowed deep grief, right? Mm-hmm. But shallow grief, just acknowledging that I'm sad about this. For example, you live in this house, you raise your children in this house, and then you decide it's time to downsize. Not acknowledging that there may be a period of time when you need to grieve, losing that house with all its sweet memories, and where you marked the kids' height on the wall, and when the window got busted out, and all the things that just are your life. Mm-hmm. And you wonder, you move into that new downsized house that you chose, in the neighborhood you chose, you put in the furniture that you chose, and you wonder why you're sad. You wonder why you're not enjoying it as much as you ought to be, and it's because you did not respect grief. I think grief has a purpose that must be respected, and has a process that needs to be followed. It's not linear. You don't finish one step and go into the next one. It could ping all over the place, but it's that healthy respect to allow grief to enter and do its work. Then you can heal and move on to the next thing. It's when we try to ignore grief, deny grief, stuff grief, that it ends up coming out in ways we don't expect. And I think it's so sad when, for example, a woman will leave a marriage or leave a job because she says, you know, I've lost myself, or now that I've been through this transition, I don't know who I am anymore, or whatever, and thinking that leaving that will be the solution. When in reality, it's really just getting back to who God created you to be, that unique individual. And maybe you never knew, like I never really knew fully who I was, because when we get married, we becomes first. What we like to do, where we like to go, the negotiations and compromises we have made. And it's very easy to lose who I am in the process. And then we start going through hard times, such as a major life transition, and we fail to grieve it. And then we wonder why I'm not as happy. Think about almost every kid that goes off to college, so excited to leave. And that first semester is really, really tough, because they don't realize they need to grieve what they've lost. And once they do that, you know, that's going to be some of the best years of their life. Mm-hmm. But I think that would be the one I would point out first, is just identifying that even though I want this thing to happen in those cases, I need to grieve what I need to identify and grieve what did I have to lose to get this. And then in the unexpected thing, obviously, to take the time to grieve.
So good. Yeah, I'm just thinking about how in a lot of times people around us don't know how to be with people who are grieving. Do you talk about that in your book?
I don't pinpoint it. I probably talk about it indirectly. But honestly, I think the mistake we make is thinking we're supposed to have some magic words to say or to know what to do. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the most valuable ministries, as it is, and when someone's grieving that you care about, is the ministry of presence. just acknowledge. So let me, I do give the examples of what people did for me. There was one individual in my church who never spoke to me about my pain, but every week for one solid year, I received a greeting card in the mail with whatever it said, plus personal notes of care and concern. But when we saw each other at church, it was a very shy man that sent it to me. He never once ever acknowledged it. Other people who would text me, they were more comfortable with texting. And it would be like, you're on my mind today. I hope you're having a good day. Mm. Or I can't stop thinking about you. Are you okay? Or how are you doing? Or maybe some prayer or a scripture. Mm-hmm. I had other people that had no words, but would always hug me every Sunday. And it's just those silent or indirect touch points that are so meaningful. It's so much better to do those things than to feel like you're supposed to give advice or say it'll all get better, or have you thought about getting remarried, or all that stuff that's not helpful at all. Mm-hmm. Just anything that a person can do to remind the other person, I see you, I know that you're in pain, I feel for you, I am here. Mm-hmm. I had one, our lead minister, every few days would send me a text and it said, you are loved, I am with you.
Mm.
And I came to treasure that. I saved every one of them. Those reminders, you are loved, I am with you. It's very simple, really, if we'll think about it and just not try to be all things and do things we're just not equipped to do. There are people who are equipped for grief counseling, but most of us are not.
So good. So when people follow this approach to loss of any kind, what is the outcome?
What it was for me, and what I would hope it would be, is to recover from the transition, to heal, going through the grief process, to heal from the grief, to grow and to learn, and to, because so often we just hang on during those bad times, hang on during that transition, and just try to get through the day, maybe with depression or anxiety or sadness or anything, you know, just being stuck. And then we just survive afterwards. We're just doing good to survive. And what the goal is that we can navigate the transition. We expect it. We have tools to approach it so that we can thrive in the next chapter. There's nothing wrong. I think it's actually quite healthy, whether it's a healthy testimony to the marriage you had before your spouse died, or a healthy testimony to the life you had with your children before they grew up and moved out, for you to move on. And so often we think that by clinging and holding on to what we lost communicates how important it was to us. But I think the reality is, you know, my ultimate relationship is with God. He created me. He gave me purpose. He is calling me to something. And I need to do the hard work of grief so that I can enter back into that in this new season of life and discover what God already has in store for me in this new season of life.
Beautiful, beautiful. I love that. Well, if we have listeners today and they want to get a hold of your book, where can they find that?
It's available on Amazon. It's also available on, the store.
Barnes and Noble?
Barnes and Noble online. But online. On Amazon, I just went blank. On Amazon, it's also available in Audible, and I narrate it. And some people like to listen to books as they're doing other things. And at the end of each chapter, I give a few questions for reflection. This is written really with the Christian woman in mind. So I always talk about what God is teaching me in the process so that they can think about what God is teaching them as they go through their major life transition.
Awesome. So good. Well, we will put the link down below if you're listening to this in Spotify or on YouTube so that you can have quick access to Becky's book. Thank you so much for the conversation, Becky. Any final words that you want to leave with our audience, especially if they are finding themselves in the midst of this transition right now?
Yeah. I think for me, the most important thing was clinging closer to God, realizing that at the end of the day, He's all I have. He's all I need. Everything else is just icing on the cake, as we say. But I sought, in addition to the books on healing, any Bible study book I could get a hold of to keep me in the Word. But I do think if you would consider purchasing this book, it will help you. It will give you tools. It's not a prescriptive, like you have to do this and then do this and then do this. But I tend to believe that when someone shares with you their ideas, it sparks ideas of your own, how you can apply it to your life. But life can, if you will do the hard work of grieving whatever you have lost, life can once again be meaningful and in some ways even more beautiful than before.
That is such a great encouragement. Yes, I know from my own personal experience, that would have been a valuable book for me for sure. And I know that anyone listening today, if you're in transition, then I want to encourage you to go and check out Becky's book. And if you want to reach her, you can reach her on the social media channels. We'll put a link down below as well. Thank you again, Becky, for being my guest today and sharing out of your pain to bring purpose into other people's lives as well, helping them to navigate those times of loss and heartache and grief. Yes,
you're welcome. Thank you, Lisa. It was an honor to be with you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone. Make sure you share this episode with someone that you know will be blessed and be able to find some valuable resources. And we look forward to seeing you on our next episode of Kingdom Women Speakers. Have a great day, everyone. As you're listening today, you may have felt prompted to say, I want to become a much better speaker. I want to be able to speak with confidence, clarity, and transformational impact. And I want to invite you to check out the link in the comments below, wherever you're listening to this. Your voice is an instrument of transformation and needs to be heard. So let it be heard.